From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Colonel Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Got a great show for you today, but we just can't wait to get to this item. So crazy, so ridiculous. You know how we routinely mock the Congress for wasting their time on trivia instead of the pressing issues facing the nation? Here is a doozy for you. The Senate this week introduced a bill officially honoring, of all things, a radio show. A radio show. Don't they know there's a war on? We will ask the sponsor of this ridiculous measure, Illinois Senator Dick Durbin, what in the world he was thinking. But first, we've got some tough questions for you. Give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, it's Andrea from Tempe, Arizona.
Hey, how are things in Tempe?
It's very hot.
So I am told.
112.
112?
Wow.
So what do you do when it gets that hot? How do you cope?
Stay inside.
Well, welcome to our show, Andrea. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to writer and comedian Paul Provenza.
Hello, Andrea.
Hello.
Next, say hello to a deputy editor and a blogger for the Houston Chronicle, Ms. Kiri O'Connor.
Hi, Andrea.
Hi there.
And lastly, well-known television, stage, and film personality, and the blogger behind Morocco180.com, Mr. Morocco.
Hi, Andrea.
Well, you're going to play Who's Carl This Time, Andrea. Carl Castle will now read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you'll win our prize, Carl Castle's voice in your home answering machine, which will be useful if you are ever again able to leave your house. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
All right, here is your first quote.
I am 66. If they had let me do this 10 years ago, I would have been 20 pounds lighter and I wouldn't have needed airbrushing.
That's a woman in Los Angeles County, California, named Robin Tyler. She was talking about something she did this week as soon as she was legally allowed to do it. What did she do?
She got married.
She did. She married her same-sex partner, of course. This was the week. Yes. This is the week that California Supreme Court's decision allowing gay marriage went into effect, and across the state, thousands of couples applied for marriage licenses, or, with that typical self-indulgence and lack of restraint homosexuals are known for, they just leapt right in and committed themselves for life to their partner right there in the courthouse. Of course, gay men and women getting married will have earth-shaking repercussions for California's wedding industry. No more tacky bridesmaid dresses. It'll be Vera Wang or flannel for everybody. No more day class A wedding traditions like dollar dances, removing the bride's garter with the teeth, their first dances to awful songs like Close to You. The food will be perfect, the wine excellent. There'll be bachelor parties at Restoration Hardware. And the Timberland Shoe Company will offer a line of custom-dyed hiking boots to go with wedding gowns.
Man.
It's just going to be great, and all we can say is mazel tov.
Man, weddings are so gay. I mean, they always have been.
Yes, they are, that's true.
They're really gay.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like, you know, these gayest of events, and we've excluded gays from them. It seems not fair at all.
Yeah.
All right, here is your next quote, Andrea.
You are amazed sometimes at how deep the lies can be. I mean, whitey? That's something that George Jefferson would say.
That's someone who was speaking to the New York Times. She was trying to reintroduce herself to America. She was starting by refuting some of the rumors about her. Who are we talking about?
Michelle Obama.
Right, Michelle Obama. She's already been a factor in the presidential campaign with her comments about being proud of America, quote, for the first time in my adult life, unquote, attracting a lot of criticism. First from the Clintons during the primary. This week, her counterpart on the Republican side, Cindy McCain, picked it up. And then there are those rumors, like the one she referred to, an alleged video in which she supposedly rails against whitey. Turns out, look at the video, she was just talking about what color to paint her kitchen. It's a nice eggshell. It's not quite white, it's whitey. So this week, the Obama campaign decided to reintroduce her to the American public. They scored a front page profile in the New York Times, and they got her a stint guest hosting the TV show The View, which showed that despite her degrees from Princeton and Harvard, she can still handle the traditional duty of being first lady, namely pretending to be a lot dumber than she really is.
She wanted coffee, but yes. She was given tea. And she said, why tea?
That's it.
Oh, God. There's so many explanations.
Yes, I know. Perfectly innocent. I have seen some legitimate criticism, legitimate in the sense like people really mean it. I should say sincere criticism of Michelle Obama, that she insists on wearing sleeveless dresses, mm-hmm. which they feel is inappropriate for a woman of her age and station. I've read that, okay? And I'm like, and other people are saying, come on, you work out that much, you get to show off. I don't see the problem. No opinion? You think this is all right?
I think she's got great arms.
Yeah, with arms like hers.
Would you prefer that she wear a white tee underneath? Would that make you happy?
All right, Andrea, here is your last quote.
I'm going to think about that, yes. Writing a book.
That's someone telling a London newspaper that come January, when he's out of a job, yeah, he might write his own book, tell his story. Who?
George Bush.
George W. Bush, our president. You remember him? He is, in fact, the president of the United States. He's still out there doing stuff. President Bush has been silent about the scathing critiques that he has received in literature form, the most recent, of course, from his former aide, Scott McClellan. But on his recent European tour, the president indicated that he might give McClellan and other tell-all authors a run for their money. He's going to write his own book, he says, or he suggests he might. Mr. Bush said he had come up with a title for the book about the road to war in Iraq. It's called Curious George and the Yellow Cake Shipments from Niger. The president said, though, that was his second choice. He was disappointed his first choice, everybody poops, had already been taken.
See Dick Cheney run the country.
Are you there, God? It's me, George.
Carl, how did Andrea do in our quiz?
Andrea had 3 correct answers. Perfect, Peter, and she wins our prize.
Yay.
Well done.
That's great. I'm very excited about that.
If they asked me, I could write a book about the way you walk and whisper and look.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Mo, the New York Times reports that Senator Barack Obama is doing his best to win over those voters he had trouble reaching during the primary, the blue-collar, rural, bitter folks. So during a stop in Philadelphia, he fondly recalled the time he spent in his youth doing what?
Bowling without a necktie.
No. He was crazy and wild in the day. Here's a hint. You know, it's true. A young man spending time with the Sharks and the Jets is better off than...
Show tunes.
He was listening to the show tunes. This is how he tried to get some...
Yes!
Some street cred in Philly. Well, according to the Times, Obama was talking about school funding in the glory days of arts education that allowed him to, you know, hone his love for Broadway musicals. This is part of a larger effort by the Obama campaign to meet with voters in more intimate settings as opposed to giving speeches in packed arenas, you say.
There are a lot of very manly musicals. It could have been Damn Yankees.
Damn Yankees is manly?
They play baseball while they're
kicking. That's true. Dancing and singing. Mo, new research on women and sexuality finds that heterosexual women are aroused by looking at many things. Videos of nude women doing calisthenics, videos of couples embracing. However, the women, surprisingly, were not aroused by images of what?
They weren't aroused by naked men.
Exactly right. They were not aroused by good-looking naked men. We all know what turns men on, namely anything. But what kinds of images would arouse a woman? A researcher named Meredith Chivers got some women volunteers. She found a clinical way to measure their arousal, of which no more shall be said. Then she showed them films of different things. She found out that images of beautiful naked men did nothing for them.
Unless,
I have a
unless
theory.
They were putting down the toilet seat.
See, I think... She's thinking about the pile of socks and underwear that he just left on the floor.
Really? Well, what does turn women on, according to these experiments, sensual physical activity. Doesn't matter who's doing it or even what they look like. Just as long as they're doing something, preferably to somebody else. So, gentlemen, next time you're hanging in a bar and want to impress the ladies, start by licking someone.
But they were the women were aroused by watching other nude women doing calisthenics.
Yeah.
Oh, that's like you weren't.
What is that?
This study, actually, to be serious for a moment, was part of a film on bisexuality, and it seems to imply.
Talk real slow.
Okay.
Dim the lights, dim the lights.
And it seems to imply that there's some evidence to back up the idea that women have a more, shall we say, open spectrum of sexuality than men do, that they can be turned on, sexually aroused by many different kinds of things, including other women. Depends on the activity.
So the Sex and the City movie wasn't a documentary then?
No, no. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is John Turnage from Livonia, Michigan.
Now, where's Livonia, Michigan?
We're west of Detroit. We're about 5 miles from the Detroit border and 30 miles from downtown.
Okay, and what do you do there?
I'm an electronic publisher, technical illustrator. I work for a company that provides manual for the big three and other car companies.
Oh, really? So you're sort of an adjunct to the car business?
Yeah, somewhat. Luckily, we're pretty diverse. We work with a lot of different companies, and we're not handcuffed to just one. So.
Otherwise, you'd be sunk.
Yes.
Well, welcome to the show, John.
Thanks.
You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is John's topic?
You can't evict me. I'm a level 9 orc warlock with a magic staff.
The whole point of those massive, time-consuming virtual reality games and the internet is to give us a break from the real world and let us be whoever or whatever we want to be. No limits, no problems. But this week we read a story about an online world shaken by real people meddling offline. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about reality intruding on virtual reality. Choose the real story. You'll win Carl's voice in your home answering machine. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
All right, first let's hear from Paul Prevenza.
Search for the unicorn is a multiplayer online game where players travel through time and mythological legends to find the only living unicorn held in captivity by an evil overlord. The People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals has hacked into the game servers to disrupt the game and bombarded the gaming company with threatening emails. In a statement on their website, PETA states, "No animal should be kept in captivity, virtually or otherwise." Just because an animal doesn't exist doesn't mean it doesn't have rights. If it must not exist at all, it must not exist freely and in the wild. Fans of the game say PETA is making the virtual situation worse and defeating their own purpose. Said one gamer, "The objective of the game is to free the unicorn, not skin it and wear its fur."
PETA objecting to a game in which players try to free a completely fictional unicorn. Your next story of escapist web geeks confronted with reality comes from Morocco.
St. Paul, Minnesota's Joe Bagnoli always wanted to figure skate, so when the 44-year-old received Nintendo's DreamSkate 08 as a Christmas gift, his Olympic dreams were virtually realized. Skating in his socks on an electronic floor pad, he regularly scored threes and fours for his modest single lutzes and toe loops, with the occasional stumble. But when he suddenly landed a perfect triple salchow as part of a flawless long program, suspicions were aroused among his jealous online skating competitors. Was Bagnoli using performance-enhancing drugs? Said skating legend Dick Button, quote, "It is almost impossible to achieve a triple salchow in such a short span of time without recourse to criminal activity." When police finally busted into Bagnoli's home, they found something worse than steroids. Bagnoli wasn't doing his own skating. He'd brought in former girlfriend Tara Lipinski to skate for him. Lipinski and Bagnoli are both under investigation.
Cheating an online figure skating game. Your last story of online fun ruined by real-world concerns comes from Kiri O'Connor.
Fans of the new and hugely popular Age of Conan role-playing game were deflated flattened, drooping, and sagging recently when the breasts of some of the Amazon barbarian queens they created suddenly shrank in size. Players of the fantasy game had taken the fantasy to new levels by creating avatars with ginormous zoftigness, and they suspected censorship in the shrinkage. There is almost no cleavage, just a flat area between them, and yes, they do sag, wailed a player named Crystal. But Funcom, the company that made the game, said it was just a computer glitch, and the pneumatic avatars would be reinflated. In short, it was just a classic Tempest in a D-cup.
Which of these is the real story of a kerfuffle in the virtual world? Was it from Paul Prevenza, PETA hacking into a game trying to save a unicorn that doesn't exist? From Mo Rocca, an online figure skating scandal in which it turns out somebody had been using a ringer to win? Or from Kiri O'Connor, the fabulous breasts on the avatars of players in Age of Conan being suddenly deflated by management? Which of these is the real story in the week's news?
I think I'm going to end up going with Kiri's story.
Really? Why that one?
Well, I have some friends that play computer games.
Oh, you do that? No, go on about it, please. No, tell me about it.
I can definitely imagine them creating gigantically breasted women. On the computer.
Yeah, no. They don't yet have the technology to do that in real life yet.
Not
too
yet,
bad.
No.
So your choice then is Kiri's story. Well, to bring you the correct answer, we spoke to someone familiar with it.
Men spend thousands and thousands of hours playing Age of Conan, and they've just decided they'd rather look at large-boobed women than people who look like them.
That was Lev Grossman. He covers digital culture for Time Magazine, explaining why players revolted when their avatar's breast size was reduced. Congratulations, you got it right.
Excellent.
Well done.
It's an odd quote. Rather than look at somebody that looks like them,
yeah, I know.
I have a feeling that some of the guys sitting at home have pretty large breasts.
Yeah. You earned a point for Kiri. You've won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting in your home answering machine. Well done, John.
Awesome.
Well done.
Fantastic.
Thanks for playing with us today.
Thanks very much.
And now the game where we ask significant people about insignificant things. Let us spare a thought for a moment for those members of a pair who end up being overshadowed by their partner. Andrew Ridgely, who once was part of Wham with George Michael. Garfunkel, left behind by Simon. Tubbs, overshadowed by Crockett. Sometimes it's hard to be second banana, so let's give a warm, appreciative, healing welcome to the senior senator from Illinois, Mr. Dick Durbin. Senator Durbin, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
Now, I'm kidding, of course, but only partially, because your career in politics goes back decades. You worked your way up as an assistant to politicians. You were a congressman for many years. Finally, you were elected to the Senate, where you've served with distinction over the years. And then all of a sudden, this whippersnapper, Barack Obama, pops up out of nowhere, gets all the press. Oh, the senator from Illinois. Oh, the senator from Illinois. So let's talk about you, sir, for once. How often do you talk to Senator Obama? What's he like?
He's on my speed dial.
He's on your speed dial. You know.
And I call him regularly on the campaign trail. We're keeping pretty close contact.
Right. I mean, as we in Illinois know, you keep a low profile. You're a hard worker. But it must bother you in some level to see his incredible ascent into the national consciousness.
No, I see it differently. I feel like a fellow who's been on a baseball team for a long time, and along comes this MVP rookie, who is about to set all the records, and it means our team is finally going to win the big game.
Yeah.
But do you ever just close the door and in your privacy say, Marsha, Marsha, Marsha? No, he doesn't.
No, I guess not. There's a story before we leave the topic that you were, in fact, key in convincing Senator Obama to run for president. The story is that you told him now is the time. You can't choose your moment. You just got to seize it. Is that what happened?
Well, there's a lot of truth to that. It was over at the Union League Club, and about 20 months ago, we sat down in a room together and talked it over, and he made the decision, and off we went.
Wow. Mm.
Was it a smoke-filled room? Or?
No. This is a new generation of politics.
So you did this for Obama. You gave him just the right push at just the right moment. So if he wins, what is he going to owe you? What do you hope to get? The Durbin Highway? The Durbin bedroom?
You know, he can't give me the commissioner of baseball, which is, of course, my life's dream.
Of course.
the other consolation prize might be ambassadorship to Italy. But other than that, I don't have many ambitions.
Really?
I like what I'm doing.
Well, let's talk about what you're doing. You are, in fact, as we speak, the majority whip in the Senate. Senator Jim Webb, one of your colleagues, was on the show a few weeks ago, and he suggested that this idea of comedy and collegiality in the Senate was a facade, that behind your, you know, my dear friend from whatever other state you're talking about, that you all just simply loathe each other and there's a lot of hostility. Is that your experience?
I wouldn't go as far as loathing.
Okay.
It's a loathe-hate relationship.
There is some tension in our relationships, that's
right.
For sure.
Right. So, like, for example, tell me about your deep, personal, sincere feelings about Joseph Lieberman.
Well, let me be very blunt and honest with you. Without Joe Lieberman's vote, we would not be in the majority.
Right.
And that's a fact. We disagree on some big issues like his choice for president, mine, and his position on the war, and mine. But I respect Joe, and I'm glad he voted for a Democratic majority.
Right. And how much are you gritting your teeth as you say all those things?
No. All true. Everything I said is true.
He's a wonderful, kind, decent human being of whom we can't say anything about until at least the next election where you get a couple more guys in there.
And does anybody sit at the lunch table with him?
Why, of course. Oh, yeah. We get along.
What? Happy
Well, you know, there are actually some strategy meetings where we're glad when Joe can't make it.
Do you actually tell him where and when those meetings are?
Well, I think he senses when he should stay in his office.
All right, I understand. Hey, I understand, finally, that you introduced some particularly meaningless legislation this week.
Well, it was a resolution.
Yes.
And it was to celebrate the anniversary of your radio show.
Yes.
And I thought that I'd really figured this one out. Chuck Hagel, Republican in Nebraska, showed extraordinary courage. Any Republican who stands up for a broadcast of NPR shows courage.
Yeah. And
give that man another bronze star.
Exactly. And so we put this resolution in. My friend Pat Leahy made sure it went through the Senate Judiciary Committee without any problems. And then it went to the floor. And I did honestly try to get it passed on Thursday evening, but it didn't work.
Really?
It turned out there was an objection on the Republican side of the aisle. So I was going to risk a filibuster and Dick Cheney breaking the tie, and I decided just to hold on to the resolution.
No, wait a minute. So the Republicans stood up and objected to your resolution commending us on our 10th anniversary.
Yes, but don't take it personally.
I won't.
Which Republican?
Can you tell us who did it?
No. You see, that's the thing about the Senate. We do things in secret.
Right.
Give us a clue.
It was Joe Lieberman, wasn't it? Really? It really was Joe Lieberman.
What was their objection to poor little us?
Let's figure it out.
I don't know, and I frankly may never know, but I've had a lot of resolutions held up for no reason whatsoever. I'm not going to give up.
No, I appreciate it.
It may be another 10 years, but I'll get it done.
I would say that's time well spent in the Senate.
I was about to say
that resolution.
I was about to say, you know, I feel it would be obligatory upon us that if you do get this resolution passed, we will make fun of you for wasting the Senate's time on such meaningless trivia, because that's our role. Well, Senator Durbin, we're so delighted to have you with us. We have asked you here to play a game that this time we're calling...
Okay, as it turns out, you can have too much money.
Or such is the lesson we take from the life of one Henry Nicholas, billionaire founder of Broadcom. Mr. Nicholas was seen as one of the big winners from the high-tech boom. He was living large in Orange County until he was recently indicted on charges of drug trafficking and financial fraud. We're going to ask you three questions about Mr. Nicholas's interesting career. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners. Carl, who is the senior senator from Illinois playing for?
The senator is playing for Emily Wiggins of Champaign, Illinois.
All right.
Oh, my goodness. A constituent.
All right. Constituent service here. Ready to play?
Ready.
First question, most billionaires, as I'm sure you know, like to indulge themselves. Nicholas is no different. He just went a lot farther. Recent court documents reveal that he once spent millions on what? A, an RV that had its own 8-person hot tub. B, renting out the entire resort of Snowmass in Aspen so he could have it for himself for an entire weekend. Or C, building a secret underground tunnel beneath his Orange County mansion so he could sneak off to a big party room without his wife knowing.
I'm going to guess B.
You're going to guess Snowmass. B, renting out the entire Snowmass Mountain Resort for a weekend. That does sound like fun, but no, it was C. It was a secret underground tunnel.
Oh.
According to a lawsuit filed by the contractors, which is how we know about it, Nicholas demanded that they build the secret lair while he took his wife to Hawaii so she wouldn't find out about it. She knows now. Okay, Senator, you still have two more chances. If you get both of these, you'll win. Here we go. Federal prosecutors say that he was constantly, Mr. Nicholas, buying cartloads of drugs and distributing them to his various friends and to prostitutes. In fact, the indictment alleges that on one occasion, what happened? A, Nicholas forced his company to put a Newport Beach cocaine dealer on the payroll as a, quote, recreational consultant. B, on one trip aboard his private plane, he smoked so much marijuana that the pilot had to put on an oxygen mask. Or C, he once bought, sight unseen, an entire pomegranate farm because somebody casually told him you could get a high by chewing on the skin.
I'm going to say B.
You're going to say B, the oxygen mask had to be worn by the pilot. You're right.
All right.
Very good. You probably fly a fair amount in chartered aircraft. You ever come across that scenario?
I haven't run into that problem.
No, I haven't run into that problem. All right. This is exciting. This is exciting. If you win this, if you get this last one right, you'll win it all. Here we go. Last question. Turns out, Mr. Nicholas, not all bad. In addition to earning billions of dollars and squandering them, Mr. Nicholas proudly points at which of these achievements? A, he convinced the hard rock band Orgy not to break up. B, he was the first high-tech exec to offer free neck massages to employees at their desks. Or C, trained as an engineer, he designed what he says is the first truly comfortable strapless bra.
There's a recurring theme on your show here.
You've noticed that.
I don't own any of their CDs, but I'm going to go with A.
You're going to go with A. I want you to say it.
Rock band Orgy.
You're going to say that he convinced the rock band Orgy not to break up.
Yes.
You're right. You did it.
Oh.
He says that he hired Orgy to play his 40th birthday party, a gig they accepted only because they're about to break up and they wanted to cash in first. But he stayed up all night with them and convinced them in the end, he says, to stay together, and they're together to this day.
That's a wonderful thing.
Isn't that sweet?
Heartwarming.
Carl, how did Senator Dick Durbin do in our quiz?
The senator had two correct answers, Peter, so he wins our prize for Emily Wiggins.
All right.
Well done.
Constituent service.
Constituent service. I don't think Jim Webb won, did he?
No.
No, he did not.
I'll rub it in.
Next time you see him. Because we all know that Senator Jim Webb really loves to be teased.
Yes.
Good luck with that, sir. Senator Dick Durbin is a two-term U.S. Senator from the state of Illinois. He is also the Senate's Majority Whip, which is a big deal. Senator Durbin, thank you so much for being with us today.
Great to be on your great show. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you. In just a minute, Carl finds his poetic muse once again in stories from the week's news. It's the Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call. The number, of course, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Kerry, we're sort of delighted to report this. According to the Wall Street Journal, the high cost of gasoline has forced some Americans to turn to what extreme solution?
They've given up something?
No, they're going to get something.
They're all going to turn to something. They're all going to turn to Segways.
Yes, Segways.
I saw that with my mind.
You did. This is, of course, the high-tech scooter that was supposed to change the world when it was introduced in 2001 by inventor Dean Kamen, but it didn't, mainly because of its high cost, $5,000 a piece, and because people look like such a dweeb. Riding it. But apparently $4 a gallon gas can change a lot of things. The Journal reports that Segway dealerships are reporting a big uptick in sales, lots of inquiries, usually from people who show up in disguise or won't give their real names. The Journal warns that these Segways don't go very fast or very far, and it says that they might be difficult to use safely, and the Journal actually cites the incident in which President Bush fell off his because he had forgotten to turn it on.
Right, right, right.
So if you are President Bush, please be cautious. The population of functioning adults, though, need only worry about their image. Thankfully, there are now aftermarket suppliers making things like the Segway Macholator, which is basically a big fake cardboard Hummer you carry in your shoulders as you shoot down the street. And it works because you're kind of standing high anyway, so it looks like your head's up there where the driver would be. Kiri, this was a busy week for political spouses. Michelle Obama, as you heard, guest hosted on The View. But Cindy McCain, wife of John McCain, was once again caught doing what?
Cookie recipe plagiarizing.
Yes, once again, she was caught plagiarizing a recipe. As you may remember, in March, the Huffington Post blog discovered that the family recipes posted by Cindy McCain on the campaign website were, in fact, Rachel Ray's recipes taken from the Food Network's website. Big scandal, big scandal. But now she's apparently done it again. The July issue of Family Circle asked the spouses of the candidates to submit a favorite cookie recipe. Mrs. McCain offered Cindy McCain's oatmeal butterscotch cookies. The description reads, quote, originally for special occasions only, these butterscotch chip-studded cookies are now an absolute must whenever the whole family gets together, says Cindy. The recipe came from a good friend, unquote.
Well,
Hillary
Clinton.
No. Turns out, the good friend, Hershey's.com. Word for word. When this was discovered, Mrs. McCain apologized. She submitted a new, completely original family cookie recipe she calls the Oreo.
She's the Joe Biden of chefs, isn't she? Cindy McCain there.
She should just start stealing everybody's recipes. Rush Limbaugh's recipe.
Paul, a woman has sued lingerie maker Victoria's Secret after she says she was severely injured by what?
Brassiere, an underwire brassiere, or corset, a corset.
No.
I'm going to have to go with panties. It's the last one I left out. Shoes, hats, corsets.
Garment. What?
Garment.
What?
A garment.
Think of how it starts.
Garbage can.
No. Just think the very beginning. What letter starts it off?
G string. Well, that's panties.
Yes, well, a thong, actually.
Well, that's panties.
Well, yes, but we wanted you to say thong.
The panties I wear are G string thong things.
She was injured by a thong, she says. It was not, despite what you may be thinking, because of a particularly bad wedgie. Los Angeles resident Macrida Patterson says she was trying on the, quote, sexy little thing low-rise V-string, that's what it's called, in the Victoria's Secret store when the following chain of events happened. Miss Patterson attempts to put on the thong. A heart-shaped jeweled pendant on the thong comes loose, flies through the air. Boing! The piece strikes Miss Patterson in the eye. Ah! Causing her to miss work for several days. She sues. Bum, 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 bum. A spokesperson for Victoria's Secret declined to comment on the case. She says this is not, however, the first eye-related injury from a thong since the mass blindings related to the famous Star Jones beach disaster of 2003.
Your reenactment was so good. Did anyone check the grassy knoll?
For a second thong?
I was going to say, I think I saw this whole plot on the Roadrunner once.
Good Lord. I'm imagining Wile E. Coyote putting on a thong, and I don't want to imagine that.
Just
get off your high horse.
Never wear underwear with metal parts.
I was about to say, why are people having sharp metal things in their underwear in the first place?
To each their own, Peter. To each their own.
Can Coming up, it's lightning, fill in the blank. But first, it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Jessica Bame in Silver Spring, Maryland.
Hey, Jessica. How are things in Silver Spring?
They're terrific.
Beautiful suburb of Washington, I know. What do you do there?
I'm a stay-at-home mom.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
How old is your children or child?
My daughter will be 8 months next week.
Oh, so you're new at this.
I have 8 months of experience.
And how's it going so far?
It's been terrific.
Jessica, welcome to the show. Carl Castle will read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly in two of the limericks, you'll win our prize, Carl Castle's voice in your home answering machine, which will be useful in about 7 or 8 years when you can leave the house. Here is your first limerick.
Let's feed bugs heavy carbs that won't spoil, and let gastric juice churn, pump, and toil. Stuff goes in as food and comes out quite renewed. Yes, our bugs are excreting crude
oil.
Right. Go buy back your SUV because the energy crisis is over. Done. Scientists in the Silicon Valley are developing a new type of bacteria that they say eats agricultural waste like wood chips and straw and poops out crude oil. LS9, one of the companies developing what it politely calls renewable petroleum, said that it won't be long before the first car is filled up with the bacteria's excretions, which it claims are both carbon negative and not that offensive, really, if you light a match. But don't! So far, the scientists have hit only one minor roadblock in the development of the new crude oil, the difficulty in finding enough reading material for the tiny oil producers to take with them into the little refinery room. Here is your next limerick.
Carry-ons are a real drag. They're making the overheads sag. I don't care what they weigh, since they want me to pay. I'll be darned if I'm checking my
bag.
Right. This is the week American Airlines started charging for checked bags. $15 for the first, $25 for the second, up to $200 for the sixth. United Airlines, U.S. Airways announced they're following suit. So, of course, people are doing what you'd expect them to do, stuffing massive duffel bags the size of a Volkswagen into the overhead compartments. One passenger said, quote, it's amazing what you can do with a crowbar and a can of WD-40, unquote.
I want to know, for that $15, did they actually get the bag where you're going?
No, that's another $15. $15 for them to check it, $40 for to get it back.
Right.
Here is your...
Don't give them any ideas like that, please.
Here is your last limerick.
The pat-down's what everyone loathes, yet our new tool has folks swearing oaths. To keep airports secure, we just have to make sure with this new tool that sees right through...
clothes.
Right. Ever joke that going through airport security would be much quicker if everyone was naked? Well, guess what? New high-tech scanners being installed in 10 airports can see right through your clothes. They can determine everything from whether you're concealing a weapon to what religion you might be. Random passengers will be shut in glass booths while millimeter waves, they're called, go through their clothes, create a 3D body image for security officials to check, to save, to pass out to their friends, post on their website. The TSA says the scans are meant to reduce the number of pat-downs. According to the spokesman for the ACLU, though, which opposes the scans, quote, people have no idea how graphic the images are. Joining forces with the ACLU to oppose the new technology is actress Angelina Jolie, who strangely has been pulled aside for hundreds of random scans since the machines became available. Carl, how did Jessica do in our quiz?
Well, Jessica had 3 correct answers, Peter, so Jessica, you win our prize.
Well done. Thank you so much, Jessica. Congratulations.
Thank Good you. Luck. I'm really excited.
And congratulations on becoming a mom.
Oh, thanks.
Bye-bye. Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Paul Provenza and Kerry O'Connor are tied for first place. Peter each has 3 points. Mo Rocca has 2.
Okay, Mo, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Thousands of people in the Midwest were forced to evacuate their homes because of blank.
Flooding.
Right. It was revealed in a Senate hearing that a CIA lawyer said of detainee interrogations, quote, if the detainee blanks, you're doing it wrong.
Dies.
Right. 2 former managers of failed investment bank blank were arrested on charges of securities fraud this week.
Bear Stearns.
Right. For the first time in 22 years, the blanks won the NBA championship.
It's either the Celtics or the Lakers. Oh, I've got to guess. I've got to guess.
Guess, Mo, guess.
The Lakers.
No! The Celtics. The Vatican has approved a composer for its papal-blessed musical on the life of the Virgin Mary. It turns out to be the same guy who composed the music for blank.
Oh, the Mel Gibson.
No, not quite. It's he composed music for the films Piranha Part 2, The Spawning, Black Orgasm, and Sex of the Devil.
Was I supposed to get all of those?
You were. The dancer and actress known for her roles in movie musicals such as Singing in the Rain, blank, died at age 86.
Sid Charisse.
Right. A poll by the Pew Research Center found that given the chance to describe John McCain with just one word, most people said blank.
Old.
Right. A village in Romania has voted to re-elect their mayor even though he is blank.
Dead.
Right. Neculai Ivascu has been the mayor of Voinesti, a small Romanian village, for almost 2 decades, and then he died. But residents weren't going to let a little thing like rigor mortis stop them from voting for him. He beat his still-breathing opponent by 23 votes. Ivascu's victory was short-lived, however, after election officials decided it would be too hard for a dead mayor to run city council meetings. One crestfallen Ivascu voter said, quote, this is true, he said, quote, I know he died, but I don't want change. Carl, how did Mo do?
Mo had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 14 points, and Mo has the lead.
Well done. All right, we flipped a coin. Kiri has elected to go second. Here we go, fill in the blank. Democrats and Republicans agreed on a bill that will broaden the U.S. government's ability to blank American citizens.
Spy on!
Yes, spy on. John McCain and President Bush both called for an end to the 27-year-old ban on blank this week.
Oh, drilling off the coast.
Yes, offshore drilling. 2 hikers lost for days in a national park in blank were rescued after they were able to get a cell phone signal.
Alaska.
Right. The FDA has approved an implantable breathing device that was tested 5 years ago by the late actor blank.
Christopher Reeve.
Right. An Italian thief recently released from prison to serve a year under house arrest at home with his wife has asked a judge blank
to send him back to jail.
Exactly. A judge in Manhattan cut the $12 million trust fund left by blank to her dog, Trouble, down to just $2
million. Leona Helms.
Right. Britney Spears' teenage sister, Jamie Lynn, blanked on Thursday morning.
Gave birth.
Yes, to a baby girl. A Connecticut python owner was arrested when police investigated a dispute at his apartment, and he responded by blanking.
Telling it to sick him.
Exactly right. Get him! Get him! Some advice for snake owners. If police are coming to investigate you, it is generally not a good idea to try to sick your 9-foot-long albino python on them. It just annoys the python and does no good. A man in Bridgeport, Connecticut learned about this the hard way. He yelled, get him! To the python. Get him! Get him! Get him! Come on now! Get him! Police managed to arrest the man anyway after they realized 2 very important things. Pythons do not understand English. And actually, they don't move that quickly. Carl, how did Kiri do in our quiz?
Kiri was perfect, Peter. 8 correct answers for 16 more points. She now has 19 points and the lead.
Wow. So how many, then, does Paul need to win?
He'll need at least 8 correct answers to tie.
At least.
All right.
American?
Yes,
American.
Here we go. This is for the game. Paul, fill in the blank. A truce between Hamas and blank went into effect on Thursday morning.
Israel.
Right. On Thursday, blank announced that he will not use public money to fund his presidential campaign.
McCain.
Right. No, Obama.
That's what I meant.
I know. The FDA said Wednesday that it may never know the origin of the salmonella-tainted blanks.
Tomatoes.
Right. ExxonMobil and Shell are 2 of the big oil companies that are about to return to work in the oil fields of blank.
Alaska.
No. Iraq.
Yes.
I know that's what you meant. A caretaker in England who was injured falling off a stepladder is suing his employer saying blank.
Ouch.
No, he says he wasn't trained to use a ladder properly, saying the film is an offense against God. The Vatican has banned the makers of the prequel to blank from filming on the grounds of any church in Rome.
The Omen.
No, the prequel to The Da Vinci Code. Apple announced on Thursday that people have bought more than 5 billion songs on blank.
iTunes.
Right. Surprisingly, the government of Australia has banned a hacky sack-like toy designed to be blanked.
Played with.
No. Set on fire and kicked around the yard. The fire foot bag.
Can't have any fun.
No. It's a fire-resistant ball designed to be soaked in flammable liquid and then kicked around the yard to the delight and horror of the whole family. But according to SpoilSport government officials, quote, the fire foot bag essentially becomes a flaming missile, which presents extreme safety risks for people who could be quite easily burned by the foot bag once it has been set alight.
Well, I feel a lot better now.
Yeah. Carl, how did Paul do? Did he do well enough to win?
He needed at least 8 to tie, but Paul had 3 correct answers. So, with 19 points, Kerry O'Connor is this week's champion.
Woot, 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 woot. It's always lovely to have my score be one of the biggest laughs I get.
I know. In just a minute, as you heard, President Bush says he's considering writing a book when he leaves office. So I'll ask our panelists to predict what will be the first line of President Bush's memoir. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Wallace Foundation, whose Knowledge Center is where education leaders can go to learn about improving teaching and learning. Downloads at wallacefoundation.org. The John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. And the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world. On the web at hewlett.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Melody Kramer, who we welcome back. And produced by Mike Danforth and Emily Ecton, the senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, is Rod Abid. Now, panel, what will be the first line in President Bush's future memoir? Paul Prevenza.
It was the best of times for me and my rich friends. It was the worst of times for everyone else.
Kerry O'Connor.
In an old house in Washington covered with vines lived 9 little justices in 2 straight lines.
Mo Rocca.
Dick Cheney. Light of my life, fire of my loins.
Well, if President Bush authors any of those lines, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Paul Prevenza, Kerry O'Connor, and Mo Rocca. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.